Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. And you know what? Today I'm gonna be nice here. I'm gonna let Adam kind of dictate the flow of the order of operations of the program, so to speak. Do we want to start with the Lions, or would you like to start with Michigan, Michigan State?
You know what? I think we're going to have a lot more fun with the Lions. We can come back to Michigan, Michigan State, but let's start with the Lions.
All right, then. Don't say later that I want to hear, oh my God, because Sean's a big Sparty, so he's trying to push off talking about Michigan State. Let the record show I let the U of M fan decide what we were talking
this
about
is like,
first.
Choose your own adventure. If you want to talk about Michigan, Michigan State, turn to page 47. Turn to 47. Just says, the end.
Pretty much. So, as always, I have audio for the Lions game, and this ended up being a pretty it started out as a close, very close game.
Yep.
But very early on, you had Jared Goff go and get sacked on the opening drive of the game.
Fakes the Gibbs, sets in the pocket, looks like he's going to get hit, going to get taken down. Sacked on the play. Arden Key came from the right side of that defensive line. Don't think Jared ever saw him that time.
But that was like the start of the game. Like, oh, here we go. This is not going to bode well. But then the next play.
The next drive, Trevor Nowoski making his presence known early on.
Rudolph takes, fakes the give, sets in the pocket, got a lot of time. Now he's in trouble. Now he goes, picked off by the Lions. It is intercepted by Trevor Nowoski. Rudolph was hit as he threw the football. Levi Onwuzurike brought the pressure. Ball floated in the air. Nowoski ran under it. And the takeaway for the Lions is going to get them the ball in great field position.
And they would capitalize rather quickly thanks to David Montgomery.
Goff up under center. Takes the snap. Turns. Gives to Montgomery. Montgomery down to the five. Still nice. Going. It's a three to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. David Montgomery just running through contact, finding the end zone, and the Lions get on the board first.
Now, Tennessee would come back and score then as Mason Rudolph ended up throwing for a touchdown not long after that. He, the former Steeler quarterback, who somehow has found himself as a starter in the NFL again because reasons. But then Jahmyr Gibbs had an answer for that.
Off out of the gun, hands it to Jahmyr Gibbs. Gibbs there. He goes across 30, go. 35 to the 40. There you go. Turns the corner at the 50. It's a foot race down the left sideline. Gibbs, 20, 15, 10, 5. End zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, 70 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs found the opening, and they couldn't find him.
I love how excited they get.
It's really fantastic. Truly, Deion Miller is a national treasure.
You can hear, like, Mike's getting hit. Things getting knocked over.
Mom's just celebrating in the background the entire time.
Cat like, gets stepped on.
So, Tennessee goes and ties it back up. And then this kickoff return.
Kickoff is going to be returned by Khalil Dorsey, who gets across the 25 to the 30, the 40-yard line. There he goes to the 50. He is in Titan territory, and he might go. Just shoved out of bounds inside the 25-yard line. It was Amani Hooker who saved the touchdown, but a big play on special teams. Khalil Dorsey took it back and sets the Lions up in great field position.
And indeed, once again, they would capitalize on that position on National Tight End Day, apparently. That's a thing now. Just learned that yesterday.
When is it National Kicker Day? Huh?
It never.
Jared looking out over that defense. Takes the snap, turns, fakes the give, throws. Got a man wide open. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Brock Wright.
Who, Dan?
Brock Wright.
Yeah.
Did not ex- Like, they, who's this guy? Never heard of him.
Give me the book on this one. I got to figure out who he is.
To be fair, I mean, it's not all that often, it seems like, that Brock Wright gets all that involved in the offense. I mean, there was the game against Arizona where he got targeted five times, but that's the only game he's been targeted more than twice this entire season, and that would be his first touchdown of the year. That kind of came a little bit out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So Tennessee again attempts to respond, and Kirby Joseph is having none of it.
On first down, play action fake, set in the pocket and throwing his Rudolph. That's picked up on the line. Kirby Joseph, here he comes, right side, inside the 25, inside the 20, still on his feet at the 15, and taken down at the 13-yard line. Interception number 5 on the season for Kirby Joseph. A big one for the Lions that sets them up with great field position here.
Yep. Now, that's Joseph had gotten previously on a touchdown from Tennessee. Joseph got an earful from the defensive coordinator. I don't know if you saw that on the sidelines. He was just yelling at him.
Oh, yeah.
Completely missed his assignment on that one. So that was redemption.
That it certainly was. It was rather nice to see. Like Joseph's really been the standout guy of the secondary this season, by and large. Like, he's been the guy who's been coming through with picks and coming through really just getting, capitalizing on mistakes made by opposing teams and really just doing a better job at it than just about anybody in the league. Up next, from there, the Lions have the ball back, and Amon-Ra St. Brown does what Amon-Ra St. Brown does.
Jared takes the snap, turns, gives it to Montgomery. Oh. Nope, kept it himself and throws to a wide open Amon-Ra St. Brown. Fooled me on the play fake, and he fooled the entire Tennessee defense because one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League was standing by himself on the left-hand side of the end zone, and Goff found him.
Oh, also, for what it's worth, Joseph now with that interception yesterday leads the team in interceptions just ahead of Brian Branch's 4. So it's at this point where basically there's no chance that the Titans are ever going to catch back up. It was kind of a blowout from there. Let's just go for some of the particularly fun things. My, Khalif Raymond had a day.
Oh, yeah.
Khalif is going to take this to the 14-yard line. Cuts right to the 15. Cuts it up at the 16. Gets to the 20. There he goes. Right sideline. 35. 40. Got blockers in front. To the 50. Leap to the 40-yard line. Slows down and cuts it back to the 25. Oh. And down to the 22-yard line. Khalif Raymond with a big return. Brought down finally by Luke Gifford. But the Lions, again, because of special teams coming out big, are going to have great field position.
And Mike, Raymond really had a game. That he certainly did. Now, they didn't end up, I don't believe, scoring on that drive, but you're never going to be mad at a 64-yard punt return. How are you going to top that? Well, we'll get to that later. But some other trickery ended up going down. Once again, it just a lot of, Ben Johnson's been just pulling out all the stops in some of these games. Part of me is like, why are we wasting this stuff on, games where things are already out of hand? But Amon-Ra St. Brown's not the only not Jared Goff player to go throwing touchdown passes, apparently.
Goff up under center, single back Montgomery. Jared takes, tosses to Montgomery, run right. He's going to throw it to the end zone. Caught, touchdown, Detroit Lions, Sam Laporta. Hey, Sam, you got your TD today. It came from David Montgomery.
I missed that one.
That is beautiful.
Nobody saw it coming.
I mean, I saw Laporta score. I didn't realize he got it from somebody other than Goff.
Yeah, so he now joins Amon-Ra St. Brown as the passers for the Lions this season who have thrown a touchdown in a game. Jack Fox did have a completion this season, but his was, I believe, just to gain a first down. There was a fake punt thing. Hendon Hooker, I think, ended up getting a little bit of work in this one. Went 3 for 5 for 25 yards once the game was, 2 for 3 for 6 yards. Those yards were against Dallas. From there, the Lions defense certainly was not slowing down any, even as the Titans were trying to work their way back from quite the deficit.
Rudolph is going to go empty out of the gun. There's the snap. Rudolph back, looking, hit. It throws into the end zone, and it is incomplete. Incomplete. The receiver had run out of the back of the end zone anyway with Kirby Joseph in coverage.
Then later on, this happens. Once again, Khalif Raymond returning a punt, and that this is about how that way. Like I told you, asked you, how could we top 64 yards earlier? Well, let me tell you.
Punts away. Khalif Raymond back deep. Had a 64-yard punt return in the first half. Takes it at the 10. Makes the first man miss. Second man miss. Gets to the 20. 25-yard line. There's the 30. 35. Cuts left at the 40. There goes Leaf. Left sideline. To the 40. To the 30. He's gone, baby. He's gone. 10-5. End zone. Touchdown, Khalif Raymond. What a thing of beauty.
He found a gear he didn't know he had.
He really did. I mean, he's been an absolute ace on special teams this year, but this might be the best performance of the season for Khalif Raymond. Oh, and he wasn't done.
Goff up under center, turns, fakes the give to Jameer. Got now him. Throws, Khalif, 10-5, walk it in, young man. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Gave him a look like Khalif was going to come for the end around, and he just doubled back to the right side. Goff threw it to him, and he was wide open.
And I will give credit where credit is due to the defense. Like, there are a lot of things that I wasn't overly thrilled with, but there were at least a couple nice, if nothing else, there were a couple fumble recoveries here that happened late in this game.
First down from their own 23. They go in the end around Ridley. Ridley is hit as he crosses the 25. The 26-yard line, ball came out, lines on top of it. At the 26-yard line, it is Detroit football. Calvin Ridley coughed it up. Lions come out of there with it. Carlton Davis is the man with the football.
And let's just go ahead and skip ahead to the last call. Tennessee was clearly ready to be done for the day. Let's hear it from Dan Miller, shall we?
There's the final play of the game. It'll be a run by Chestnut inside the 40 and out of the 39.
This is the end of the game.
Yes, it is. We had a 14-14 tie with 14-18 to go in the second quarter. Since then, the Lions scored 38 unanswered points to close the game, and they win it by a score of 52-14. So many big plays. Two teams will meet out in the middle of the field to say job well done, job better done on this day by the first place Detroit Lions as they improve their record to 6-1 on the season.
And stay ahead of everybody in the NFC North thanks to some help from, I believe, the stupid Rams on Thursday night.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the Lions, everybody is contributing. I mean, even with Aiden Hutchinson, who got a big old applause when they showed him on the Jumbotron.
As well he should.
Yeah. I mean, everybody is chipping in. Everybody's playing at the top of their game. There is very little standing in the way of the Detroit Lions. As far as the NFC North, Washington Commanders, that Hail Mary pass that's sewn it up for the Chicago Bears.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that here a little bit later, probably when we get into overreactions and all that good stuff.
Oh yeah,
but
okay.
I do have to say though, I'm still worried about the defensive line. Like the Titans were attacking the edge of the defense because they knew they could because the Lions didn't have much. Like they weren't able to set the edge at all with Hutch out, with Davenport out. I believe Josh Pascal missing the game. Like in everything they seemed to be doing early on was working very well in that regard. Now obviously the Lions turned around and settled down the second half, but you only got one sack on the day, and that was from one of your linebackers, Alex Anzalone. Like you don't like to see, like, If that's going to be the case against Tennessee, how you think that's going to work for you against Green Bay? I don't. So I do still have that kind of bit of concern about that.
Yeah. Well, we all expected the Lions to beat Tennessee, and we expected them to beat them by this much. But, I mean, yeah, it just seems like, at least on offense, everybody was really chipping in. And I guess, you know, a good defense is a great offense.
Oh, yeah. I have no complaints about the offense. Jared Goff did... He didn't need to do a lot. This is one of those games where you can't really fault Jared Goff for what he did or didn't do because he wasn't asked to do a lot. Like, it was mostly your special teams carrying a big part of the thing.
Yes.
And then he did get sacked four times on Sunday, two of which I would say not really his fault. I mean, those are both he's getting hit on the blind side. But you're now looking at four fumbles in the last two games. And thankfully, you recovered all four of them, but still...
Right.
That is a concern. But he didn't, Goff, by and large, didn't really do anything wrong in a lot of that. Obviously, the running game, fantastic. And the Titans have about as good of a run defense as any in the league. For all the things they're bad at, they're usually good at stopping the run. Not so much on Sunday. And Jahmyr Gibbs was just having himself a game. Obviously, Montgomery didn't do terribly. Certainly 3.6 yards after contact on average. You will take that. But watching just Gibbs and the speed he had on that touchdown run, per Amazon, their next-gen stats, he reached a top speed of 22 miles an hour on his 70-yard touchdown run.
Wow.
The second fastest speed by a ball carrier this season. My God, like, I feel like we can run about 6 miles an hour on a good day.
If we are on fire, maybe.
Right. They averaged 6 yards per carry, which pretty good, last I checked.
Yeah.
And obviously your tight ends contributed in large part. You know, Brock Wright found the end zone. Laporta got his touchdown today. In fact, Laporta had a season high, 6 catches, 48 yards, and a touchdown, of course. They're responsible for over half of the receiving yardage in this game, which is not to take away anything from the receiving unit, who did entirely fine without Jameson Williams. But they weren't expected to do a lot. They didn't need to do a lot. Right. They weren't really being counted on here to make a lot happen. So I'm not going to be overly upset about that. There are things I am a little bit worried about, though, and that is your O-line. You've now allowed 4 sacks in back-to-back games. 15 sacks in the last 5. That's not good. Like, if you're expecting to be a Super Bowl contender, you can't have an average of 3 sacks a game. That's just not, that's not sustainable. Taylor Decker particularly has had it rough lately. He let Arden Key pick up a couple sacks after actually officially tripling his output for the season. He had 1 coming into Sunday's game. He finished with 3. That's a bit of a concern. Other than your run blocking, fantastic, because the Titans' D-line was very good. Like that, we've said, they're the best, one of the best teams in the league at stopping the run, and you were entirely up to that task yesterday. It just, it has me concerned that you're letting guys get to your QB as often as they are in the last handful of games, and that's something that has to be addressed. You can get away with that against Tennessee. You're not going to be able to against Green Bay. That's a little bit of a worry. And that's one that we're not really chalking it up to, you know, to injuries or using that as an excuse, because you have your full, you know, your O-line going more or less at this point. But it's something you're going to have to tighten up on going forward. Cannot allow that to happen, because that's going to make for a really rough season, a really rough rest of the way on Jared Goff, and, you know, will contribute to things like, you know, fumbles and stuff happening. But I'm trying not to be that guy about the defense, man. Like, but it's just concerning, even for a team that only gave up 14 points yesterday. It's just like that D line. I have concerns. I have a lot of concerns.
Yeah.
These are things that are still going to be issues for me going forward, and I really do want to see a move made here before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You've got Green Bay coming up, and I imagine that's going to certainly be enough to if this continues, like, you're still not looking like a particularly well-oiled machine back there. Like, I assume Brad Holmes might actually be forced to make a move. Like, I don't expect at this point. I want them to call on Myles Garrett. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm asking for. If it ends up just being Za'Darius Smith, I can live with that. I can be fine with that, but I need something to be done, because what you've got is not, it ain't doing it for me. And I don't know if you heard, apparently, old bowl cut Mark Davis came out and said he ain't trading Max Crosby. So I guess that dream can officially set sail.
Yeah, dang it.
I know.
That's too bad.
I'm so disappointed. Like, I know we were all hoping for it. I think everyone who roots for this team was really hoping something like this was going to happen. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised that ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Because, I mean, okay, Max Crosby can say that, but it's not ultimately in his hands whether it happens. But literally, Mark Davis emailed ESPN. I don't know, honestly, quite frankly, how this man forgot how to use a computer, but he just went, I assume he just emailed, like, the contact at ESPN, like, whoever, like, in the tech support department at ESPN.com. We're not trading Max Crosby. Before or after the trade deadline, 3! Every single word capitalized.
Well, that's so he can read it.
That's just kind of hilarious to me. That he felt so strongly that he had to go and literally email ESPN to tell them, we're not trading him before or after the deadline, ever, ever, ever.
What do you think the subject line said?
I don't think Mark Davis knows what a subject line is.
Heads up! BTW, by the way.
Like, I don't exactly see him using, you know, text speak or, you know, teen slang or anything.
It doesn't start out with, I hope this email finds you well.
No, it did not. And that's about what you'd expect from a guy who apparently is still somehow letting his mother cut his hair. Like, that's the only thing I can understand, how you look like that at that age. We could sit and make fun of that man all day, but we're already kind of up against it here.
Yeah.
We will hit on the rivalry game coming up on the other side of the break. Don't worry. But right now, we got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. All right, so I guess we have to talk about this as much as I don't want to. Oh, hi, by the way. It is happy hour.
Do the Victor Valent
Hill. Oh, God. I'm just turning off your mic now. God, that was an embarrassment is what that was.
I wasn't
honestly, sure. Neither team looked particularly good.
No.
Just somehow, State managed to look worse.
9-7 at the end of the half.
This might be the most pathetic year of the rivalry game that I can remember. Like, all the way around, like, neither of these teams look like they could contend in the Big Ten. Like, you look like just basically bottom feeders, both of you.
Yeah.
There's no good coming from that. And then, I mean, so the football itself was not particularly great at all. Like, your running game, like, State's running game went fairly well, at least. Like, Nate Carter had his, career best 118 rushing yards and a touchdown. Also had 56 receiving yards on 2 catches, which was nice to see. Unfortunately, and actually, your run defense went pretty well, too, for the most part. Like, you remember last week, you faced Caleb Johnson for Iowa, match to basically shut him down. You didn't allow Khalil Mullings to do a whole lot. He only had 18 yards on 13 carries, and Donovan Edwards only had 24 yards on 9 attempts. What I don't understand is how you weren't able to stop Alex Orji. He led the Wolverines in rushing yards at 64 and also had a touchdown on 6 carries. How is that possible? You know every time Alex Orji goes out there, he can't throw the ball. You know he's going to run it. What are we doing? Why can't we stop this guy? I don't understand. Your pass rush was absolute garbage. Like, once again, we can't get to an opposing QB to save our lives. Failed to get a sack for the 4th straight game against the Big Ten team. And granted, Davis Warren only threw 19 times over the course of the night, but you haven't had a sack in over a month. This passing defense is absolutely, positively putrid. Just playing as safe as possible. The blitzes aren't getting home when they actually do happen. Just, there was nothing good to speak of here. Everything about it just absolutely was infuriating, and quite frankly, you deserve to lose that game. I'm not thrilled about this. I know this team wasn't good, but it still does not make me feel particularly good about the state of this program at all.
No.
Here, you tell me how great the Wolverines are, Adam.
No, I'm not going to. I mean, I picked Michigan, but I would not have been surprised had Sparty were able to pull this one out. Because they have been, they were, like what I said on Friday, they're on the way up and the Wolverines are on the way down. But it's like, you know, instead of every given Sunday, it's any given Saturday. As far as the Wolverines go, that could very well be their last W of the season. We looked at their schedule. There's not really one game out there where that's going to be, oh, that's definitely going to be a win.
I would think so. But so many things about this team are concerning. Like, Aiden Childs is still a worry. Like, I remember we talked about on Friday that, like, well, hey, we got a guy who can throw downfield. Problem is, he can't throw to his team half the time and also can't hold on to the ball. Another fumble, losing yet another fumble. Number four now on the season. What are we doing? Taking intentional grounding on the final possession. You're trying to tie this game, and we're just giving away points, giving away the ball. Everything about it just, it's a team that is just not ready for prime time, and Jonathan Smith does not have them ready. I can't be happy about that.
No.
Then you had your kicker miss a chip shot 25-yarder.
Yikes.
Then some of the worst onside kicking I've ever, like, that got snuffed out real quick. It was not, and then, oh, you were also offsides on that kick, so there goes another 5 yards. Lovely. Like, everything that could have gone wrong seemingly
wrong.
Did. And I have so much, like, why did Smith not call a timeout with that delay of game penalty? Like, how do you not have your team ready at least call a timeout to not lose 5 yards and then set your kicker up to miss what already should have been an easy shot, but go and make it even harder for him? I don't understand that. Everything about it. It's frustrating, man. It's a frustrating watch right now. And there's a couple other things I know are going to come up that have to be mentioned here. First, the officiating. I have watched a lot of football over the years. I don't know if I've ever seen a team finish with zero penalties for 0 yards. Like, I can't buy for a second that there was nothing in there. Like, because there were some things you could certainly argue should have been penalties that weren't. I'm not buying for a second that you played completely mistake-free football if you're Michigan. Quite frankly, should have been testing them more downfield. And, you know, well, we'll see just how mistake-free you are when you're getting called for pass interference. Like, actually make them work for it. Make their secondary work a little bit, why don't you?
Yep.
And they didn't. Then the other thing. Yet another scuffle after the game.
Yeah, that was a big one, too.
Yeah, I'm not happy about any of that. That there's no reason for any of that to have happened. Like, we know these are two teams that don't like each other very much, but when you have, Colson Loveland and Anthony Jones getting into a shoving match, which, okay, whatever, that's going to happen. It's a rivalry game. Loveland headbutting Jones' helmet.
Jeez.
And then, you know, and then someone who wasn't a player for either team getting stomped. Like, now you'll watch. State's not going to do the thing that Michigan did after their incident after two seasons ago and going, here, we need to get law enforcement involved in this. We're going to press charges because, you know, we're not a cheap program like that.
Yeah. We start fights, but then we don't want to be arrested for it. Yeah.
Yeah, we started that fight. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I don't know what happened. All I know is they were the footage I saw, they were trying to interview one of the Michigan players, and all of a sudden the scuffle happened like 10 feet to their left.
Yeah, I didn't realize it happened until well after the game. I kind of tuned out after, well, I mean, I was on stage playing, so I didn't get to see any of the aftermath of that until well after the fact, but I guess Loveland took exception to Jones getting a little aggressive on victory formation, which, I mean, of course, you're down by 6 points, and it's a rivalry game. You kind of expect that. The headbutting's uncalled for.
Yes.
And you know Big Ten's not going to do anything about that, even though you could argue that they should, because the Big Ten's obviously going to protect Michigan at all costs. That's just kind of, you come to that expectation.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're really as protected as people think.
Yeah, absolutely are, because if they weren't, there would have been actual consequences that would have come out of all the nonsense last season.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, the Big Ten's interest is absolutely in protecting their marquee brand that's not Ohio State at this point. Like that's always like become that has become first and foremost entirely obvious that that's the case. It just it's frustrating that they're going to get away with that, and then of course Loveland dropped the little bro thing. Like, you know, that whole thing, I can't even sit here today and be mad about that, because quite frankly, you don't want that to happen. Win the damn game. The game. Yep. You don't have to worry about, you know, idiots chirping and not having to face any retribution for it.
Right.
That's just kind of the way that goes. I'm not going to sit here and get all up in arms about that. You know, prove it on the field next season.
Right.
How about that? How about, you know, take care of your business on the field and then worry about the, you know, use it for bulletin board material or whatever you got to do. I'm not going to sit here and because I can't. I can't, because you didn't deserve to win Saturday night. You right. didn't play good enough in pretty much every facet of the game to come away. Like, Michigan basically had to play completely and utterly mistake-free football in order to win, and then still barely won. There's something to be said for that, but I'm not looking to take moral victories away from this, because this should have been an actual victory. I can't sit and accept that. That's, you know, and be okay with that, because this was supposed to be an actual win. You should have come away. There's no reason, looking at the matchups here, like, you were dominating on the run, you know, the run game side of things. Your defense was making it so that no one other than apparently somehow Alex Orji could run. It's like Jonathan Smith had no idea that Alex Orji doesn't know how to, you know, can't throw the football. I don't know how you're not ready for that, but sure. But it was a winnable game that you basically gave away. I mean, you can make the argument here. You got to beat three, you know, there's three things you have to have victory over to beat Michigan. And that is Michigan, arguably the refs, and you. You got to keep yourself from, you know, beating yourself. But once again, that's kind of exactly what happened. I don't really see a whole lot of success coming up against Indiana, but that's your next matchup. But stranger things have happened, I guess. Who's Michigan got after this? I already told you my thoughts on where the wins and losses fall the rest of this season. You're not beating Oregon. You're not beating Ohio State, and I don't think you beat Indiana either.
No,
you got to face Michigan. Oh, they're facing Oregon this week. Yeah, and you're a 14.5 point dog, and for good reason.
Yeah, Northwestern maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You should be able to beat Northwestern, I would think.
But then Ohio State, yeah, they're just, unless the wheels really fall off in Ohio State, I think that's going to be an L for Michigan.
And they're now thinking, oh great, now it looks like Rourke's going to be back against State this weekend. Lovely, that's what I'm really excited about.
Yay.
So we've got all that to look forward to. It's going to be a really great week for anyone who's a fan of a Michigan team this coming weekend. So we have a little bit of other housekeeping to take care of. Of course, it is Monday, and things happen around the National Football League, which, you're going to be shocked by this, weren't the Lions putting the beat down of a lifetime on the Titans. Things happen. People overreact to them. We're here to tell you what's real and what's not so much. Maestro, the music, please.
All right.
Lay them on me, Adam.
I got a couple things. You're ready. You're ready to give me is this overreaction or is this reality? We start with the Eagles. The Eagles' offense is going to be just fine.
No, I kind of agree. To be entirely honest with you, I mean,
they started off slow, but they seem to have found their way.
They did. Like, they didn't score in the first quarter, but you'll remember Joe Burrow and the Bengals, like, that drive of theirs took like 10 minutes off the clock. So, yeah, of course they did.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. When you're scoring 37 points in the next three quarters, I'm not so worried about it. Jalen Hurts had three touchdowns. He ran for three touchdowns, threw for another one. And Saquon Barkley had 108 rushing yards as well. So I'm really not that worried about it. Hurts went 16 for 20 in passing. You can't really be upset about that. And this was without two of your starting O-linemen. Like, this team has had no problem scoring points eventually. Like, between Hurts and Saquon Barkley, like, honestly, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, those guys, you put that collection of guys together, they're going to put points on the board. Not worried about it. Totally overrated. Like, things are going to be fine. Everyone who thinks otherwise is overreacting.
There you go. Buffalo Bills. We're going to Buffalo. The Bills are going to coast to their fifth straight AFC East title. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
You know, I have to say, I don't think that is an overreaction at all. I mean, the Dolphins lost at home to the Cards on Sunday, and I still say, why is Tua even playing? Tua shouldn't be playing. That dude should never play it down again.
No.
The Jets are completely, utterly just a clown show, and I am 110% here for it.
Who'd they lose to?
New England.
New England.
And New England's only got two wins on the season, so who really cares about them? Yeah, they're going to coast. It doesn't really matter what they do at this point. There's nobody in this division that can make a run. The Jets already sacked their head coach. Aaron Rodgers, despite the fact that they traded for one of his like preferred receivers, are still not good. They still couldn't beat the Patriots. So you can't expect me to have hope in them. The Patriots are one of the worst teams in the league, period, full stop. And you really think the Dolphins are going to make a run? Like, they were awful without Tua and still weren't particularly good with him. No. Yeah, this is going to be the easiest division that Buffalo's ever had to face.
Well, we'll see what happens in the playoffs when they start going to get some tougher. I don't think the Bills are going all the way, if I'm just going to be so bold. The Rams and Cardinals are both legitimate threats to win the NFC West. The stupid Rams and the dumb Cardinals.
I mean, honestly,
less than
at this
intelligent
point,
Cardinals, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like that's entirely fair. I mean, San Fran was 3-4 going into Sunday night, but ultimately, the Cards won. The Rams, of course, beat the Vikings, and the Seahawks are now 4-4.
Yep.
This thing is wide open. Like, I think we all thought that this was the Niners' division to win. Certainly, I thought it was the Niners' division to win. As it turns out, that is looking far and far less the case. I mean, the Niners did pull out a win against the Cowboys, but like everybody's 4-4 now. Like, this is one division that I think anyone's really got a chance at. Like, I feel like I don't know who even comes out on top of this thing. I couldn't handicap this to save my life. Like, Seattle might find themselves playing their way out of this. The Rams beat the Raiders, of course, after they started 1-4. They beat the Raiders, and then there was talk that Cooper Kupp might be on the trade market. Like, no.
No. Get out of here.
That's insane. And then they came back and did this. I'm confused as to how the Cardinals are this good. Did they not get the memo that Kyler Murray's washed and this team's supposed to be god awful?
I guess not.
And I'm still waiting to see Seattle beat a quality opponent other than, well, I mean, if you can count the Falcons as a quality opponent. Like, they've been good, but they haven't really beaten anyone particularly good.
It's odd that you say the Falcons, because that's our next entry. The Falcons' signing of Kirk Cousins has lived up to expectations. Is that reality, or is that an overreaction?
I feel like that's entirely fair. I think that's an entirely accurate statement. They put up 31 points on the Bucs 3 weeks after they hung 36 on them. Like, Cousins is now the fourth player in NFL history, if you can believe this, with 750 passing yards and 8 touchdown passes against a single opponent in a season. Like, that, and like, that's quite a class he finds himself in. Joe Montana, Dan Marino, and Y.A. Tittle are the only three that have ever done that before. That team's now a game ahead of Tampa Bay in the division, and they've clinched the head-to-head tiebreaker at that. I mean, obviously there have been some stumbles, like you had the aforementioned loss to the Seahawks, but this team's doing quite well, and it's in large part because Cousins is just racking up passing yards like crazy. So I think there's something to be said for that. I can't really I can't dog on Cousins as much as I want to, and God, it's so fun and easy to do so.
Yeah.
But I really, really can't.
Yep. So in baseball, the New York Mets have Grimace. They're kind of like their mascot, and they keep winning. I would have to say a bold statement is that the Washington Commanders have their Grimace in the name of Drew Dufany, because he has picked them, I think, every week in the picks, and they are doing really, really well. So our next overreaction, or reality, is Commanders our best team in the NFC East.
I mean, look, they're 6-2, and Jaden Daniels is him. No doubt about it. He's probably your offensive rookie of the year. But the Eagles are still, they're not quite keeping pace, but they're only a game back. Right. And Washington still has to play them twice. The Bears are the only team the Commanders have beaten with a winning record. So beat the Eagles, and then you can say that you're the best team in the NFC East. Until then, I still can't quite buy into that, I don't think. What do you got for me next, Adam?
Bears lost the game well before the Hail Mary, which so was a great Hail Mary
what
pass.
A play that was. Yeah. That was it's very rare that we see a play that just amazing.
Yeah.
Like that was, if that's not the play of the year as it stands right now, man, I don't know what is. Like if you didn't see it, go back and watch this. Jaden Daniels goes out there like there. You're down, like, you're seemingly done for the count. Like, I really thought, wow, Caleb Williams really is going to end up getting the best of Daniels here. I might end up having to be wrong about this guy.
Yeah.
But he goes out there. I think it ended up being a 52-yard touchdown when all was said and done. And, I mean, that was a wild game anyway. And probably one of the better games this week. If I'm to be entirely honest with you, but
did not see that coming.
He goes out there and just chucks it up, and I think they bounced off of that, or it got tipped.
Yeah,
by one of the Bears defenders, and they gave Daniels all day to launch that thing, and got tipped into the hands of a guy in the end zone. Like you couldn't script that better than it was, man.
No, that was great, and on home turf too.
So, meaning that, yeah, they had the – so as far as your overreaction here,
yeah,
I think it's probably – it is an overreaction. Like, they had that game basically won. If anyone knocks that ball down and knows what to do in that situation, unfortunately, that's not quite the case. Now, there is a little bit of – I will say there is some criticism to be had for the goal line fumble earlier in the quarter that would have given Chicago the lead then. It was an odd decision because they called in a backup offensive guard and made him eligible and decided not to hand the ball off to a running back. And ultimately, that led to a fumble and the Commanders recovering the ball. The Bears were going to score on that play. Like, if they execute there, then none of this is all a moot point and they don't even have a chance to win. But they even despite that, they still had the lead. Until they screwed that up. So, no, I think it's an overreaction. Are there things they could have done to secure the win sooner? Yes. But they had, I wouldn't say they'd already lost the game at that point. The defense should have been able to bat that ball down or at least keep it away from a Washington receiver.
We move to Indianapolis. Anthony Richards won't be the Colts' starting quarterback in 2025. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
You know, I'm coming to the conclusion very soon that that is going to be a reality. And, okay, so we got to talk about this. And I know a lot of words have been expounded on it. I believe Pat McAfee put Richardson on blast for this. He tapped out of the game on Sunday out of a play. He said afterwards that he was, quote-unquote, tired. Not a good look. But I don't think that, like, I'm not going to sit here and judge him particularly harshly on that. What I am going to judge him harshly on is the fact that the first half of that game, you only completed two passes and finished the game 10 for 32. That's not great. Like, there was a pick that was, shall we say, questionable at best. And it's not that necessarily his fault that he gave you a chance to win. He did throw. He had passed for a touchdown. And you had a chance to win the game, and you would have been tied for first place in the division despite all that. It ain't working, though. I will say this is a team that's they're going to ultimately falter in that division anyway. The Texans have that thing sewn up, I think. And I know that this is a young team that could still – a team that could contend, and then Joe Flacco would do better. But you always kind of knew that this was how this was going to be. Like, the shoulder injury kind of delayed the inevitable here. But this is there's going to be growing pains. I mean, he was picked so high that they have to at least give it a shot, at least the rest of the season. Otherwise, you are going to be drafting again in 2020. Like, you're going to be drafting another QB, I think, here in either next season or the year after. Like, whatever happens from here is, you know, whoever ends up being is just a bridge QB till the next guy's ready. Richardson ain't going to be the franchise guy. I truly don't believe he is. But right now, they don't have any other options unless they get a particularly high draft pick next season. They're going to try and at least make this work. There's no sense in benching him and completely killing the guy, killing his confidence or what's left of it. Like, there's, you just kind of got to suck it up, I think, and let him grow.
The Ravens. The Ravens lost to Cleveland. That was a heartbreaker.
Ravens, yes, it was.
Ravens lost AFC North with the blunder against the Browns.
Okay, that's ridiculous. I'm sorry. Like, the Bengals are struggling. The Browns are struggling. I'm not going to be mad at this. Like, you're not. The Bengals are playing their way out of this race quicker than anything. Now, the Steelers could lose the division lead this week. Or the Steelers could take the division with the a win over the Giants tonight. So the Ravens could, in theory, trail here, but they haven't lost the AFC North yet. The Ravens still have to play the Steelers twice, and I think that Baltimore should be able to handle them once that happens. Cincinnati's not out of it yet, but they're kind of playing their way out of it, and then Cleveland, it doesn't even matter. I mean, this was a bad loss, but quite frankly, this was never a team to, like, I know the Browns were bad, but Deshaun Watson's bad. Like, you put Jameis Winston in, and he's immediately an upgrade. I'm not entirely stunned, like, oh my God, how could you have let this happen? Now, if it had been Deshaun Watson starting and you lose to him, okay, then I will grant you that's really a bad look. I will fully back up that. But this, you know, you haven't lost the North by any means. Like, you've still got plenty of interdivisional games with which you can make up your ground. And against Pittsburgh, and that's really the only team I feel like you have to be overly concerned about.
Let's talk about the NFC South. We're going back to Atlanta. Falcons have full control of the NFC South. Is that reality or is that an overreaction?
That is 100% truth. We talked about it. Kirk Cousins can seemingly do no wrong right now. Who else is contending in that division? The Falcon or the Bucks? They just lost both Chris Godwin. Godwin's done for the season. He's on injured reserve, at least. Mike Evans is going to be out for multiple games as well. You're basically running out of patchwork of wide receivers at this point to replace two absolute studs at the position. And you swept the Bucks. Like, so you've already got the tiebreaker on them. This division is 100% Atlanta's to lose. The Saints are awful. They've lost six in a row now. The Panthers are an abomination that should just be wiped from the earth at this point. Atlanta's the only team that matters in the NFC South. Period. Full stop.
Let's talk about coaches. Dennis Allen will be the next head coach fired.
Ooh, speaking of the Saints. Like, they started 2-0 and then just completely and utterly imploded. This is the, again, here we're setting history, I guess. The first team in NFL history to lose six straight games after winning the first two games of a season by 20 or more points.
Like, it's this weird is how bad. It's weird how they keep those kind of stats.
It's weird that we're looking at a team that is setting these kind of records. Like, things have just, like, but this is kind of the prototype of, you know, these the Dennis Allen coach teams, though. Like, start strong, completely and utterly implode, and then all of a sudden they start looking competent again once they're basically eliminated from the playoffs. Like, you're a bad team. This is a bad division. This isn't working. Fire him out of a cannon.
We have received notes from the top brass at Sandlack Broadcasting that we're not appealing to the Swifties enough. No, so
aren't we now?
Yeah, so I guess to appease our masters up in their ivory tower, eating caviar and drinking Chardonnay.
As they do.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Travis, please don't fire us.
Travis Kelce is still a top three tight end in football. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
I mean, looking at how he's played over the last month, I mean, the numbers really don't lie. He's not, am I going to say he's the best? No, not at all. He's I would argue, not an all-pro anymore. That's for certain. Yeah. In fact, I would argue that I'm still arguing that Sam LaPorta is better. I think there's still an argument that George Kittle's better.
Oh.
You can make an argument for Brock Bowers, too, quite honestly.
Isn't that Mario's enemy?
No.
Bowser, sorry.
Bowers, I said.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he had a game yesterday, 10 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. So he's at 30 catches for 266 yards and a touchdown over his past four games. Like, he's playing like a top three guy right now. I would say that's a borderline overreaction. I mean, if we're just taking the last month of games into consideration here, yeah, but over the course of the season,
yeah.
I'm still saying overreaction.
There you go.
Sorry, Swifties. You deal with it. You'll be fine. Shake it off or whatever. We'll come back and we'll close this thing out with, I don't know, whatever.
You running from your life for your life from a bunch of 30-year-old women.
Yeah, that's mostly probably what it's going to be. It'll be fine. We'll worry about it when we get to it. It is happy hour. Stick around. So as we get set to get out of here this afternoon, there's quite a few ways really we could go with the last, you know, 10 or so minutes of this show. We could hit up the Red Wings. We could make fun of the fact that somehow Adam hasn't touched his fantasy hockey team and is doing great. Meanwhile, I'm suffering embarrassing losses to big podcasts, but you know.
I did not even know I was involved because I never set my lineup or anything else. I couldn't figure out how to get back into it. I'm usually pretty good about my passwords, but I couldn't remember how to get back into it. I'm going to have to look into it because I'm actually or do I need to get into it?
Please don't look into it. That's what you need to do.
I didn't even know I was involved, and I've got a winning record.
Congrats.
Yeah. You're like 3-0, 0-3. I'm 2-1, so.
Yeah, so much for actually putting forth effort. Now, lesson learned, never try. Anyway, that's not what I really plan to get into.
Yeah, sure.
But we do have to, I guess, rant at least a little bit about there is a baseball thing going on right now of some sort. Series of a world variety here.
The season's over, so these two teams decide just to go ahead and have a little fun. And you know what?
Good
God
on
bless them.
Good
know?
For them. I hope they all have a good time.
Yankees, Dodgers. Game three of the World Series. So take that, Indonesia.
Yeah.
Dodgers are up 2-0. So is it time for the Yankees to panic a little bit?
Please, panic all you want. I love it. I live for this. I live for really the pain and suffering of New York Yankees fans. It's really the reason that I get out of bed in the morning.
Cabbies are careening into piles of people in Manhattan.
They really, truly are. I love everything about it.
Because they're going to lose to the former Brooklyn Dodgers, those bums.
I know, and I'm here for it. Can I just have to complain at least a mild bit about this. I mean,
yeah.
I already hate this matchup, obviously. I mean, there's no No question about that. You guys know I hate the Yankees with the fiery passion of a thousand suns, and I'm not a huge fan of the Dodgers either.
Yeah.
I mean, they basically become like the West Coast version of the evil empire, even though, like, I will say, they did build a lot through their own system. Like, they draft better than your team does, pretty much than every team does.
Yeah.
And I have to give them credit there. But they also just can add pretty much any player they want at will as well. And I hate them for that, because that I don't get to have that with my team. Like our team's owner won't just go out and acquire everybody ever. Why can't I have that? This is
why can't I have nice things?
Exactly. I'm not good with it.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I'm kind of annoyed with here is the way that everyone was just kind of freaking out, that the media particularly was freaking out with the injury that Shohei Ohtani has suffered the other night.
Yep.
And how, oh my God, like this is basically the end of this series and whatnot. Like I'm trying to pull up. There was a particularly dumb take from Ken Rosenthal over at The Athletic, you know, Captain Bowtie. And he partially dislocated his shoulder in game two. He is, however, expected to participate in game three. But just looking at some of the overreaction, like Ken Rosenthal in particular, anytime he misses will diminish baseball's biggest spectacle in years. And his past injuries have shown every day he is out is a lesser day for the sport.
Yeah.
They realize Morrissey was writing for The Athletic now. Good Lord. He's gonna play game three. It'll be okay, and it's not gonna. Oh well, there just has to be an asterisk next to this World Series if the Yankees somehow come back because Ohtani.
Come on,
like that's basically what he's saying. Like it would diminish the whole thing. Like good Lord, get at there. You realize there are 51 other people that play between these two baseball teams in this World Series. Like Shohei Ohtani's not the only guy playing.
No, he is not. And the Dodgers, they've been here before. They know what they're doing.
They've been here a time or two, man.
Yeah. Like, but, I mean, if you were you see those maps all the time on Facebook where unless you're in, you know, New York City or, you know, Southern California, really don't care which team is really involved. And to the point, my point is they don't really MLB has really gone the NFL – excuse me, not the NFL, NBA and NHL route, where they really want to focus on individual athletes as opposed to the whole team. So they've been building everything around Ohtani, and now he's not there.
It's not even the fact that they're doing what the NBA does and, you know, building the brand around superstars.
It's LeBron James and the Lakers versus...
And NHL is not... I mean, they've tried it to some extent, but the problem is with... the MLB is they've put all of their eggs in one singular basket.
Yes.
Like, it's not like there's multiple stars. I mean, they're kind of trying with Aaron Judge, but that's about it. It's like, they've basically, like, Ohtani is the face of baseball. No one else matters. That's basically how they've, what they've kind of come down to, and it's really kind of a slap in the face. I mean,
yeah.
When you've got guys like Mookie Betts going out there, and he was hitting close to 290 in the regular season. Like, this is a stacked team. Guys like Rojas and Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, who had just absolutely stellar seasons. Like, basically everyone is hitting just as well as, you know, there's some of the best hitters you'll see in Major League Baseball, man, with the exception of guys like Hayward, who I think is the only guy who's hitting below about 230, 240 in the everyday lineup. And just... And even the pitching is like Yamamoto comes out of nowhere and gets a World Series start and just absolutely crushes it. Like you had so many other good stories that Yamamoto went 6 1/3, his first ever World Series appearance. And he goes and he only gives up one hit in that span. Like you can't take anything away from that. Like that's impressive. But you know we're focusing on Ohtani to the sole exclusion.
Yeah.
Of everything else. And look, what he's doing is nothing short of amazing in this league. 50 home runs. You can't take anything away from a guy who's got, you know, 50-50, you know, home runs and stolen bases, like well over both of those in the regular season. hitting 310, which these days in MLB qualifies as tearing the cover off the ball in a league where nobody hits 300 anymore. But it just kind of annoys me that, like, every single, like, I get it. He's a once in, like, multiple generations talent. But it's the series doesn't end if he's not playing. Like, they're not going to postpone the series until he comes back.
No,
like, there's still baseball to be played here, and also he is going to play. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be just fine. Let everybody
settle down.
Talk him off the ledge, Sean.
It's just a bit ridiculous. And also, it's kind of funny that everyone's agonizing about, will Shohei play next game?
Oh, my God.
Considering that Aaron Judge hasn't showed up yet in this series. Sorry, it is what it is.
Mic drop.
can't really be upset about that. Well, I mean, I can't be upset about it because I hate the Yankees with a fiery passion
of a thousand suns.
And they're gonna throw this guy out like people are pointing out he's hit 159 with 55 strikeouts in his last 35 playoff games. Like, he still has not had that defining World Series moment. The fan base is completely turning on him, and I am 110% here for it.
Yay.
Bring it. I love this. I love your. I bask in their hate and their agony and everything else. But we got to get out of here. Stick around. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3. See ya.